Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
Hello, Ivy Podcast listeners. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning into another episode of the Ivy Podcast. You guys have tuned into our episodes in over 40 countries. So whether it's good morning, good evening, good afternoon, we thank you guys for spending some time with us. I'm your host, Angela Alberti. And if you've listened to any of the episodes we've had recently over 2022, it's all about female empowerment. And that is definitely the case in today's episode. So excited to sit with Mari Casey of Uncompany. Mari, can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thank you, Angela. I'm excited to talk to you guys today. So my name is Mari Casey. I'm the founder, CEO of Uncompany. Uncompany, we are a modern digital talent agency. So we help our clients globally tap into this massively growing pool of independent contingent workers. We work with our clients in kind of a strategic fashion to help them build, grow, and scale utilizing contingent freelance workers all across the world. So my background comes from advertising. I worked as an art director for several years within agency space. And then in 2009, 2008, I myself decided to leave full-time and start freelancing. And so I like to say I was ahead of the wave, but I started freelancing back then. And just really, it was such an amazing opportunity for me to build a business independently and to understand what I wanted to build and to build really work around my life versus the other way around. And it was this huge kind of awakening moment for me. And it was just a huge opportunity. And I realized at that point too, that there was just a lot of other people that were looking to do this. And so that kind of started my trajectory into the independent contingent working space. And I've just kind of scaled up from there.
Oh, that is awesome. And I love the whole proposition behind Uncompany, because you guys really embody a lot of the future of work. Analogies when we think about the platform technology, the freelancer pool, the digital way of talent platform and talent delivery, almost staffing-esque, but in the new age. And this is all truly what these episodes are about, is to consider alternative ways or non-traditional ways, maybe now even becoming traditional ways of very good talent pools. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that deciding factor in which you just, you know, embarked upon going on this entrepreneurial mm-hmm. journey. What was that point in your career that you said, you know what, I'm going to do this and I'm going to start Uncompany?
Yeah. Well, when I started freelancing, it was largely for a lot of the reasons that I think we see people making that transition now. And it was just because the way I was working wasn't working for me anymore. I was, you know, overworking. I was in a stressful but fulfilling job, but the transition point of my life where all of a sudden the life demands of caretaking, I was getting married, raising children, taking care of a sick family member. I just didn't have the capacity to also work 40 plus 60, 80 hours a week and travel. And so I needed to find a different way to do it. And so when I started freelancing and kind of building my life around that, I, by nature, just came across so many people who are making that transition, and you just kind of approach them and you see that look in their eyes of panic, where it's like they realize they can't make work for them and they just need another way and they don't quite know how to do that. And so I spent the first several years when I was freelancing, just like I would sit down and just have conversations with them and say, it's okay, you know, there's another way to do this. You can build a business, you can work and also be at home and, you know, and do all those things in between. And it was really fulfilling. And it's really at that point in 2012 to 2015, I saw that there was an opportunity to build what I think I would have loved to have, which was what I kind of call a soft place to land. So an alternative for folks who are looking for, you know, how do I get into independent working? How do I build a business? How do I just transition my mindset into working independently? And then also for clients, how do I tap into this workforce? How do I utilize it? How do I operationalize it? How do I, you know, fully understand how to work and process with contingent workers? Because it is different.
It is totally different. It's a big part of, you know, the ever evolving landscape around us, whether that's legislatively mm-hmm. or even just from a lifestyle perspective. If you had the opportunity to sit with one of those freelancers, maybe it's the hopeful freelancer that's tuning into today's episode. What advice would you give them so that they can get started successfully in this new endeavor?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's, depending on where you're coming into things, you know, I think it depends on what stage of career you are, and also what factors are external of your job. So family factors, health factors, you know, economic factors, all those things have to come into play. And I think the transition that really takes place and is taking place is this transition as us as a worker is really kind of transitioning to like me as a business. So it's not like I am Mari a worker. I am Mari Casey Incorporated, you know, employee number one, employee of one, business of one. And what I choose to partner myself with, if I choose to partner myself with a full-time company, that's great. If I choose to go at it as an independent, then that's great. But I need to think of myself first as a business. And that includes building a runway. So knowing how much money I need to make to pay myself, to pay my bills, to keep the lights on, pay for the car, all the things. I need to have an understanding of what my budget looks like first and foremost. Because, you know, you don't want to jump off day one and be like, I have to make my entire salary to cover my costs and not really have an idea of what your expenses might look like. So I would say start with a budget, start with a plan and build yourself some runway. Give yourself, you know, 2, 3 months, 4 months if possible, just in case you have some ups and downs. There is that learning curve of learning like how to find clients, how to close a client. And then you, of course, you work a job, invoice for a job, and then get paid for a job. So building out that space is really the first step. And then starting to identify your clients, go after them, feel comfortable, you know, selling yourself, pitching yourself. That's a big process to kind of get over for a lot of people who have never actually had to sell their services directly to a client.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. It's a very different approach to look at. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think that one of the other ways to think about it as well is to know that you're going to have to invest into this, just like you would a normal business. There's going to be costs that you would incur and considerations that you wouldn't have in place before, whether it is, you know, setting up your EIN with the state and making sure that you have some insurances in place. And I like the analogy that you put, it's not Mari Casey, the worker, it's Mari Casey, the business now. And that's the way to approach it for sure. I'd like to kind of take it to the other side of that perspective. You know, we referenced John Younger, shout out to John, the Forbes writer, in his most recent article, actually earlier this year, he let us know that there's about 7,000 different platform technology freelancer tools. And I want to put this through the lens of maybe somebody in a procurement department, in a corporate talent acquisition department, and in some form of HR that wants to tap into this talent pool. Where the heck do you start in such a saturated market to know that you have this availability and also can have that option available to you as an alternative strategy?
Yeah, it is a massively exploding market. And it's funny because, you know, I've been freelancing since 2008. So I'm like, I'm an early adopter.
You've totally seen the revolution, by the way. Like this.
Yes, maybe I started it. No.
there you go.
but, you know, I've been, it's funny because I think we all have that moment at different points of our career. And it goes different ways where you just wake up and you're like, wait a second, this should be different. This should be done differently. You know, and I think there's this massive push of technology, acceleration, innovation, which of course has accelerated our work, which of course globalized our workforce, which has just put such a massive demand on business owners to say, I need to do more with less people and I need to figure out and navigate and mitigate the world, which is, you know, kind of cuckoo bananas sometimes. how am I going to do that? You know, and I think this growing freelance pool, which is, I think is like 58 million right now, something like that, just in the US alone.
Just in the US, that's right.
Is the opportunity. You know, this is highly specialized people who are understanding how to work quickly and how to self-manage. The interesting thing is with COVID, you know, I call COVID like the global snow day because we've all needed this big change of work. It's been coming for a long time, which just has taken us a while to catch up. And I think it's largely because businesses are slow to change. You know, it's like, why would I want to change something when it's working and it's very integrated, and especially when you have compliance and you have procurement and you have processes.
It's the like, classic, we've always done it this way.
Yes, that's one of my, I have a great quote for that. And I think it's like trying to steer a cruise ship on a dime. You know, it takes decades to move. And I think the opportunity that COVID gave businesses is we all kind of jumped off at the same time. We all had to figure out hybrid working, we all had to figure out, you know, remote teams, we all had to figure out Zoom, all those things. And, you know, we saw the staff, you know, staff really take a hit. We lost a lot of people, laid off 50% or more of their team, and they had to cut headcount. And that really brought into light the need to use this flexible model and to use freelancers. And I think a lot of those people who were let go looked at this alternative way to work, and they started to understand the plus sides of being independent, how they could actually make it work, you know, with their with their kids at home, and then they could also provide value. And so we've seen this explosion in the last 2 years of freelance platforms and communities, and with John's, you know, connections and access, it's like seen it on a global perspective. And to me, I'm just like, this is awesome, because this is something we've been talking about for so long. I think the part of where companies are coming into the picture is they need to take a moment to first assess their staff internally, have a solid idea of what my headcount looks like, what's my seasonality of business, where can I bring in contingent workers that make sense? Because it's less, from my perspective, it's less of freelancers should be used to like stop the bleeding in moments of panic, and they should be like fully integrated into the team as an ongoing team member, but just in a hybrid fashion. So it's really taking the first look at how your staff is built and where are those opportunities to bring in freelancers, contractors, part-timers, remote workers, all of those classifications.
Yeah, and I definitely want to dive into that aspect a little further, because there's clearly going to be a cultural impact and some best practices to look to veer around. But I want to take it back then to the point of the freelancer. And for those who don't know, I think the best part about this revolution, if you will, is that there's a sense of a person's livelihood and prioritization around their own personal preferences when we've been entrenched into a culture that is very work first. Everything else is kind of second. And where have you been? And how long have you been there? And we grew up with generations. You know, my mother was in the same position for 25 years.
Yep, same fathers, same companies from 19 until he graduated, until he retired.
Yeah, I mean, I was in college like when she was leaving her role, and that's just normal. And it's totally different now. And I think at some point I look at the freelancer and I'd be like, wow, I would love to do that one day personally, maybe several years after my base pays chapter closes. But I think that this is all, that's the most exciting part about this, is that you can really prioritize a person's livelihood. But with that, there is this understanding that you're not necessarily a protected employee class. We almost have this unprotected class of an individual worker acting as their own business entity and performing the services, period. No unemployment, no health insurance. If we could flip a light switch, Madi, in your opinion, what would be some of those protections that you would love to see happen, maybe statutorily speaking, to further protect this working class of the population?
Yeah, it's that whenever people talk about, you know, freelancing, of course, health insurance, top three all the time, health insurance, retirement, setting my salary and career growth. And I think that is a complication, that is a barrier for people, understandably, especially people who are older in their career, maybe are supporting family.
Wow.
That's a big thing, you know, and I think especially in the US, like that is something that we have to overcome and figure out how we can, you know, make that more accessible to everybody. Because I think if that was accessible, then we would see even more freelance transition, because I really think that is probably the biggest barrier for a lot of people. Some of the ways to mitigate just the insurance and retirement costs is to take it on yourself. And it's not fun. It's not the sexiest side of freelance, but I think a lot of times as workers, we've put so much of our own ownership and our own livelihood in the basket of our employer. It's like, you tell me what retirement looks like, you tell me what health insurance looks like, you tell me how much maternity, paternity, caregiving leave I get. And part of becoming an independent worker is taking all of that into your basket and figuring out how you can make it work. So maybe I don't have health benefits, but I'm going to increase my rate, or I'm going to self-pay and I'm going to write that off on my insurance, and I'm going to figure out how to make that work. I don't have retirement benefits. I don't have a 401k. I don't have a pension, if any of those exist anymore.
I know.
But what my dad did have a pension too, one of the last ones. But what I am going to do as a freelancer is I'm going to find ways that I can set for retirement. Maybe I'm investing in real estate. Maybe I'm investing in funds. Maybe I'm putting money into, you know, mutual funds and index funds, but I'm taking the ownership over of my retirement because I don't have an employer that's doing that for me. So I think it's a combination of understanding the financial side of running a business and what that includes, because you are now an employee of your own business. So as an employer, you owe it to your employee, which is you, to make that plan, put that plan into place. So I think that there's ways that you can do it by yourself. I would love to see a place where we have accessible healthcare, where we have retirement plan. I think one of the big things with especially independents is owning a home, right? Because it's hard to build that credit history and that employment history when you are an independent and your wages and your salary and your income is variable. And I've seen that especially over the last 2 years with all the interest rates dropping. Everyone wanted to buy homes, and I had so many freelancers like, I can't get a mortgage, but I have, I don't have employment history in the traditional sense. So that is also a barrier. So there's a lot of those things that we have to figure out to make it more accessible. Mm-hmm. But a lot of that, I think, also just kind of comes back to us as independents educating ourselves in those ways that we can figure out a way around it. So it's just kind of being a little innovative.
Yeah. And hopeful that we are the generation to spark some change on some of these.
I think we will. I think it has to be figured out. And I think that we have a massive pool of people that need that resource. So I have high hopes that we'll figure it out.
And health insurance is one of those things that just sucks. Like, honestly, if you're an employee or a freelancer, it's not a wonderful experience either way. So
no.
I am hopeful that we can be the spur of change in a positive light for that particular industry. So through that though, you guys have been able to, and I like how you put the snow day analogy on the pandemic. That's certainly a way to look at it. But outside of that, outside of the social construct of what we see happening through the freelancer, you guys have always been able to tap into a globalized workforce. And I'm sure in some cases you're dealing with freelancers that don't necessarily have the same problems that a freelancer in the US would have because they're maybe more protected in Europe or in Latin America or what have you. How have you guys grown into this globalized workforce? And what are your thoughts in general on curating a globalized talent pool?
Yeah, I think it's... The interesting thing is looking at things from a global perspective, the US versus Europe versus LATAM and all the different places, is everything is very different because it's all very much based on what's happening with the government there, with labor there, with culture there. And so it's honestly just about, educating yourself as much as possible about what is happening, what's happening now, but then what is also coming. Because of course, with this like truly innovative workforce, this new way of working, it's not just like here we are and this is what it is. It's like this is constantly changing. So we can't really sit still and be like, oh, this is comfortable and now we know how to do it. It's a constant innovation, which for me, I love it because I'm a lifelong learner. But understanding what's happening and what's changing, like things are changing over in the UK now. You know, things are changing constantly in the US with employment law and with classification. So just making yourself aware and then doing your best to mitigate and communicate those changes with your freelance pool, with your team, but then also just with your team internally.
Yeah, that is a very good way. It seems like truly, as somebody that is learning the globalized workforce, it is so vastly different in each country that you go into. And speaking of culture, we can now have one department that is made up of a freelancer, a contingent worker on a long-term project, maybe for years, right? But not directly an employee, a temporary worker, and a full-time worker. How do you approach this, I guess, in your opinion, on the best practices to create a cohesive culture, all aligning towards that same goal, which is the overall betterment of the company? What do you think is going to be the cultural impacts and best practices around that?
I think that's a super great question. And that's one of the barriers I see for a lot of clients that want to use freelancers, but they say, this is why I don't. It's because I always say, like, they don't understand my business, right? They don't know the culture. They don't have the institutional knowledge. And I'm like, they don't, and from my experience as a freelancer, walking in cold to a company, not knowing anything, not knowing who to talk to, where the point of contact is, what the brand idea is, it's always a tough spot to start a project and to fully engage when you do feel kind of like an outsider. So what we try to tell our clients to do is we actually work with our clients and we do a cultural onboarding. We onboard them. We get to know all the nuts and bolts and details, but then also like, what is their mission, vision, value? Like, what are their, what are their social initiatives? How do they interact? Are they using Slack? Are they using Discord? Do they prefer text messages? What is all their communication styles? Because there's all those little nuanced things that makes a company feel cohesive, and it's interesting right now because even after COVID, a lot of us are still trying to figure out just the asynchronous communication and working style. So it's a good time for companies to really take a look at their onboarding just in general, but also how you onboard and bring freelancers into the fold and really start to view them as a temporary but yet permanent part of your staffing plan. So while they're coming in and out throughout the year, they're fully engaged in understanding the business, the goals, the values, the team structure, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, to just summarize that, it really comes into play in that pre-analysis to ensure that you're partnering with somebody that is taking the time to understand the cultural nuances that are associated with, and that way you can set up your freelancers or your contingent staff for success.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, this is the place that we find ourselves in with Uncompany, is kind of sitting on the fence between the internal team, you know, what they want, what their goals are, all those things, and then the resource pool, which of course is 58 million plus people and growing, and people are coming in and out, and there's, you know, new folks every day, and what value are they adding, and what are they focusing on? And so there used to be this, I had a producer I worked with in advertising, and she used to always say, it's just like herding cats, you know, it's just like, who's going where? But there's an aspect of that. And I think the value out of finding, whether it's a platform or whether it's a group, is to find somebody who can help you navigate how to utilize this pool most effectively. So one thing we do is while we're building a team, it's also making recommendations to say, hey, I noticed you're using this person more consistently. What if you put them on contract? That would benefit the freelancer. That would benefit you. You have continuity and et cetera. So it's having somebody who can understand both sides, how they work differently and how you work differently, and then trying to bring that cohesion together.
Yeah. Wow. Which, you know, is a tall order, but it's a critical part of how to do it.
Yeah.
I love how, you know, you've given some good insight into the lens of the freelancer, best practices on getting set up and becoming a freelancer. Somebody within the enterprise organization looking to tap into this pool. You know, this is part of our female empowerment series, and I'd like to ask you now, advice that you would give to that hopeful entrepreneur. And in fact, if you can speak to Mari, like maybe, you know, 10 years ago and give yourself your own advice on like, hey, you need to watch out for this because this is happening. Uh-huh. This is something that you weren't prepared for. What advice would you give to that person?
That's a great question too. I think just learn how to set up margin in your business and in your life. So it's, you know, we tend to run super fast these days. You know, it's now that we have all these tools and automations, we can do multiple things, you know, as opposed to like taking a break and sitting down, we're like add more on. And I tend to be that. I love working and I love doing more and learning more and squeezing every moment of the day out. But I think when you're building a business, it's important to understand that there's going to be those times where things just kind of come crashing down and you're going to have those ups and downs and those ebbs and flows. And the days where you wake up and you're like, I'm the worst person ever. Why am I doing this? And then the days where you're like, this is the best choice I ever made. And just be aware that it's not that you're ever behind or you're ahead. You're exactly where you should be at that moment. And I think there's this misnomer when we see the famous entrepreneurs and they're just all flashy and cool.
Yeah, the unicorn statuses in four months. Like, wow.
I know. And it's like, they probably didn't wake up overnight and just hit skyrocket. Maybe some of them did. But the value of building a business is understanding that there's going to be those ups and downs and that you have ownership over that process. You know, and I think it's, for me, even though when I'm in a down spot, I'm like, man, I hate feeling this way, but I remember that there'll be another side when I'll come up from it. And so it's all about building a process. And someone told me at one point, like, realize that you are exactly where you should be right now. You know, you're not running behind somebody else and you're not ahead of somebody else. This is where you should be in your business right now. And just to own that time and then just to work through those things and just take them one little thing at a time. I think it's great. And align yourself with really powerful, smart women who can support you. I think that's huge.
Boom, just drop the mic. You know, I'm walking away with some advice in what you said there. And that's the value of building a business is through the ups and downs. And we know that sometimes the hardships is what define us and form us. And just remember that when you have that ever lurking sense of imposter syndrome, that's just sitting in the pit of your stomach. You posted something about that the other day on LinkedIn. As well, but it's so true. And it's something so valuable to remember. So thank you so much for sharing that. That was awesome. I'd like to wrap up today's show with just an understanding of what are some resources that you tap into to learn more? I think the more and more I have these wonderful opportunities mm-hmm. to sit down with people and very expert, skilled people, the more that I realize that they constantly are learning. And as I mentioned, mm-hmm. you know, our cell phones are this infinite black hole and sometimes a danger zone. So you have to be very restrictive, just like you would yeah. in your everyday life on what you consume physically for your diet. What is your content diet and what are some resources mm-hmm. for learning that you like to tap into?
Yeah, that's great. And I need to start a diet really soon. So thank you for reminding me before we get into it.
Yeah, subliminal messaging right there. Marketing at its best, Mike.
I love learning. And again, that's another side effect of being a business owner is I'm learning every day. And I love that. I love it. I am an avid owner of a library card. So I use my local library all the time.
That's awesome.
I read a lot of business books, and I'm not saying I read them all the way through, but I'm constantly reading 3 or 4 different business books and scanning and picking up tidbits. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I love podcasts. You know, I think it's that communication that feels like you're talking to a friend when it's a good right. podcast. You know, it's absolutely. Like you're getting advice from a friend. I have a group of other women founders and CEOs locally and globally that I connect with on, you know, like we do Zoom coffees, we do Zoom lunches, and we do in-person lunches. And that feedback and that learning, because we're all at different levels and different scales, is essential, because I'm at a place where somebody might have been 3 years ago. And so I can say, what did you do? You know, and so it's really, really wonderful to have people who have been in your place and to communicate that back and forth. And then just blog articles, LinkedIn, you know, thought leaders, folks like John, folks like yourself, I think are a great place to learn and just connect. I think that's the amazing place we find ourselves in right now. It's just the world is such a connected group of people. And if you can find your people that you can connect to, then it's so powerful. It's like, I can talk to somebody in Dubai, you know, and I can share ideas with somebody, you know, in Dublin. And I think that's just a powerful tool that we have right now to use.
Oh yeah. There is no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. And you got to know your tribe at the end of the mm-hmm. day. I think you said it yeah. perfectly. These groups of peers and mentors and knowing that the mentor, something that I've learned is I won't know it all, right? You don't know it all. And you're learning from the person yeah. that maybe is 10 years younger than you. And you're like, wow, you just become a mentor to me. And it's not traditional in any huge. Sense, but it's just that opportunity to be open about it. So yeah. Very good. So where can we find out more information about you, and where can we get in touch with Uncompany?
Yeah. So you can go to weareuncompany.com. That is our website. That's our web presence. So you can connect to us through there. If you have any questions about, you know, freelancing or connecting to us as a client, you can start there. You can find me on LinkedIn, Mari Casey. I love to connect to folks, and I'm trying to be out more in the community and, you know, always love to get on a Zoom conversation, especially talking about work and the future of work. It's just so exciting. It's exciting to be a part of what we're designing now. So I appreciate yes. you giving me the time today to talk about it.
Absolutely. And fun fact for the audience, that's how we came across each other. It was just a random LinkedIn post, and I had a chance yeah. to check out what Uncompany was doing. I was enthralled with the content that you guys are posting and the information that you share. And I was like, you know what? Mari's going to be on a podcast. So this is what yes, all it's what closes the loop. But Mari, we really appreciate you spending some yeah. time with us today. Time is a very valuable thing, and it's probably the best gift that you can give somebody. So thank you for your time. Thank you for the audience's time as well. We'll see you guys on the next episode of the Ivy Podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Of course.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.